Welcome to the shed.
Welcome to another episode of In the Shed with Ryan. I'm today joined by a very special guest who is a plant-based entrepreneur, angel investor, and a speaker with his fingers in many vegan pies. So welcome to the shed, Louis. Great to have you here. I know we've been trying to do this for a while, and I'm now three teeth short and one tortoise gone, but it's great.
R.I.P. Alan.
R.I.P. Alan. But yeah, so how are you? You good?
I'm good, man. Yeah, I'm good. I think we were saying on the way over here, I'm riding the wave and
not knowing where life is going.
Exactly. Strange times, but yeah, I'm very much in it.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So I was going to start off going sort of to your humble beginnings, but I just wanted to ask you a little question that sort of come to mind, and that's, when did you discover Alan Watts, and how has like philosophy helped you through the later years?
I think probably around the age of 18 or 19, initially on YouTube, and then I think the first book, you know, the one with the cover where it's like the mirror. I can't remember what the title of the book is now.
Who Am I?
Who Am I?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've got that upstairs.
Yeah, and I couldn't really, do you know, at the time it was quite difficult for me to process, and I got some bits from it, but I was watching kind of the YouTube short lectures and it made a lot of sense, but also I found it quite challenging to take on board. And as I've got older, it's resonated more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, it's something that I spend quite a lot of time reading and share a lot of the views and perspectives on the world they're in. So yeah, it's been really helpful, and philosophy in general has been really, really helpful, I'd say.
Yeah, I can definitely relate, because the guy talks in riddles. And I think I started listening, how old are you?
32.
I'm 32, so we probably both started listening to Alan Watts about the same time. And I think my perception at the beginning, it was just like music. You know, you can hear the tones, but you don't know the notes. So a lot of the time, like now I hear it and it's like he's leaving clues.
When he talks about like realizing you are God, that made no sense to me.
Yeah, yeah.
19.
Mm.
And then after I'd taken a reasonable amount of psychedelics, I'm like, I get it. I think even like on psychedelics, I've had that real, now it would make sense what Alan Watts said, like I get it.
Yeah, I mean?
Sometimes it takes that catalyst to actually have that that depth of understanding that where you can realize what he's actually saying. But yeah, I think definitely even more so like recently, the last couple of years, I've really kind of deep dived and having more time to, or committing more time to philosophy and to reading and to writing, probably dived in a lot more over the last 2 years than ever before.
Yeah, so was that something after COVID, more searching, or after a lockdown situation?
Yeah, I think it's just compounded, like the work that I've done, like on myself or in this kind of spaces, having more space during COVID for sure, and I've just continued it since then.
Then you wanted that.
Yeah, you're looking to understand things on a deeper level, and it certainly helps to facilitate that.
Yeah, I mean, that with Alan Watts, I find he puts it in a way, like I went from chill step, you know, chill step Alan Watts, so you hear like the drum, yeah. I run to it, and then it's like, oh, brainwave. And I'm like, Siri, take this in a note.
It's a lot softer than like listening to like the reading like Krishnamurti or someone like that, right? Like you read Krishnamurti, like I try and read philosophy before I go to sleep. That's like my nighttime reading.
Yeah.
And it leaves you with questions to kind of think about as you're, you know, doing your meditation when you're going to sleep or whatever. But Krishnamurti is quite tough questions to really think about. But Alan Watts, I find, is more...
He can send you to
playful.
Sleep.
Yeah, exactly. It's more playful. It's more, you know, it's more like of a hint of like...
Analogy around the world.
Yeah, it's a humor to it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, sometimes he just laughs. Yeah, literally, yeah. He does laugh in meditation.
The analogies are just amazing. And I think it was a way into Zen Buddhism as well, and he's kind of like dissected it for a Western mind. Is what he's always known for.
That's
right?
What he's thinking. Yeah, from the Eastern to the Western.
But I think
yeah.
if you go directly into looking at something like Zen Buddhism, it's very difficult to comprehend coming from a Western upbringing. Whereas I think he's able to communicate
He's top G when it comes to middleman. 100%. Yeah, I wish he was still around now. I mean, Terence McKenna as well is one of my favorites.
You've seen my tattoo, right?
No.
I can't if I can roll these up to get it out on the podcast.
Put your tights on.
I've got a Terence McKenna's portrait on my leg.
Fucking hell, yeah, you're heavily invested.
I am. Yeah. And Terence's voice is just... It's another voice that I just love listening to.
It can be so nerdy, but so easy to listen to at the same time.
So unique.
Yeah.
As well, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like anyone else.
It's like a strange kind of, you know, it's like, it's a bit like that. Yeah.
Just it's just how he would go into like tangents and stories and like, it's very mystical, but also, you know, the exploration. And is at a time where, you know, we've got referenceability for a lot of this stuff now. You can listen to people like Terence McKenna or modern people, you know, whereas I think at that time this was such new, at least in a Western context, you know, not necessarily from an Indigenous perspective, but certainly for our Western mind, you know, smoking DMT or taking mushrooms was like such, like, there was no reference. Like, uncharted.
Crazy people.
It's like uncharted territory, right?
Yeah.
You
know,
you weren't hearing it on Rogan every 2 weeks.
No.
It just wasn't really spoken about.
Yeah. I mean, and it was after the Vietnam War, sort of around the 70s, that's when they just abolished it, took it away. And now it seems to be creeping in a lot more. And obviously a lot more people are waking up. And now we've got this library of these two guys. I think the difference between Alan Watts didn't take a mad amount of psychedelic, that wasn't really his thing. It was more the analogy of life and how can I express it through words. And then Terence McKenna was more like, yo, I've met the machine elves and I know what this all is. So the jump between them two is just insane. I think insane. So entrepreneur now, but what was school like for you? Because for me, most of the traits I see through entrepreneurs is they hated school or they was no good in that kind of system. Was it something you enjoyed back in the day, or did it lead you to doing what you did today, or was it like out of school, didn't know what to do?
I think there were certain things, certain elements that I enjoyed, like a community aspect for sure, like, you know, having friends, like hanging out with like your friends every day, that kind of thing. Obviously, certain subjects, like I love sport. I liked, really enjoyed English literature, like writing English. But anything that I didn't like, I didn't bother with. You know, it just seemed pointless. I questioned everything. So why? Why am I going to sit here an hour and do maths? Like, I found it really. I found authority really difficult. I found it really difficult being told what to do, where to be.
Mm.
That was probably the biggest thing for me. So, you know, I left as quickly as I could. I left when I was 16. I didn't see the point. It was tough in some respects as well. Like, I had bright ginger hair when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And my earliest memories was being bullied for that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was felt like it was immobilized. Like, I can't change this. I'm like, I'm seven. Like, what can I do? So it got me in, you know, I developed a response where I just used to lash out at people.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to get in trouble for that because it used to really kind of torment me. And I think that was one of my early things, was that I had to try and be good at stuff to be accepted.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And that kind of, so that I wouldn't be bullied or wouldn't be, you know, stand out. I wanted to be really good at football or good at fighting or good at climbing trees or good at whatever was deemed the cool thing according to the age that I was at, so that I would be accepted. And I think that kind of was a lot of the driver for success in whatever kind of format that took.
Yeah, because I think, you know, first of all, like, being bullied or anything like that happening, first you get angry, but then you learn, okay, where can I put that energy? Can I harness it into something else that is gonna, you know, allow me to feel happier in this environment where it can prove to these people, not that you should have to anyway.
But I think that's what you learn. I think you only really understand in later life when you have time to sit with it, and often, as you know, like assisted through psychedelics or breath work or whatever the protocol might be, it's only then that you really appreciate just how traumatic some of those experiences were and how much they've actually shaped the person that you are in later life. And it can be such trivial things like your favorite teacher leaving school when you were six, who you formed a really close connection with, and a feeling of abandonment after they'd left, or, you know, not being picked for a certain team and the feelings of inferiority that then, you know, compound over time. And we know from a neurological level that we perform behavioral responses to trauma, which then, if they're repeated over time, become form part of our personality, and it's very difficult to undo those, right? And often the memory fades away, but the reaction or the behavior stays. That we develop as a response to the trauma stays.
Mm.
So it's been very interesting, and even recently, you know, more stuff's come up that I just completely forgotten about, or that I maybe had deliberately chose not to remember. And I was like, wow, that happened, and I don't remember that happened, and
yeah,
that's been a bigger thing than maybe I've appreciated,
because it's still there if you can find it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still there for sure.
Yeah, because that's where I think memory and energy is I find it so amazing, because you know, in sort of a chakra system, then energy is stored. So if there's trauma, that energy can be stored there, that energy can then, you know, get involved or be a problem to the organs that are around that energy. Mm-hmm. So there's so much that we should be doing, I think, in those avenues to remove these traumas, or mm-hmm. to remove anything that you know, that is stuck within us that we don't know. Because when you look at memories, they're very similar to a dream.
Mm.
You know, no one's memory of something is the same, and it's very hard to explain a certain memory. I was free, just running around. You know, you can't. It looks like a dream in your head. You know,
you don't remember exactly how it happened. As it happened, you remember perhaps the environment and how you felt. But it's very
yeah.
You remember exactly what happened. I think the same is true of, you know, we can talk about like a collective consciousness, a memory that sits in the collective consciousness, memory that sits for an ancestral memory. You can talk about memories from different lifetimes,
you know,
and how that trauma can carry over, which is something that I've been playing with and thinking about more recently as well. And it sounds a bit mad to some people, but I've experienced something like that.
And
it's made, you know, and people are like, well, how do you know? Like, you know, well, I don't know, but I kind of know as well. Mm-hmm. There's a knowing beyond knowing that doesn't sit within the kind of the five senses, right? So I remember when I was a kid, I had this fear of my house catching fire while I was asleep.
Yeah.
I was like two or three, and I couldn't.
That will keep you awake.
Yeah, I couldn't go to sleep without the light on, because I was worried that this fire was going to take place. And it wasn't until I was 24 or 25, and I took a pretty heroic dose of mushrooms, and I had this like vision of myself in a different body, waking up aboard a ship that was on fire and I couldn't get out.
Mm.
And that the message from, you know how you said that the mushrooms took me?
Yeah.
It was like, this is, and I'd forgotten that memory of feeling like that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I brought back to that memory, and it connected the two. And I was like, is that a past life? Is that me carrying that fear of into this life? And even for the reading that I've done and people that I've spoken to, you know, even physical ailments that can carry over, like if you've got something happened to your right leg in a past life, how a sign of that can carry over into this life. It's so interesting. And you know, again, like, you know, we've got this very kind of rational, logical,
you're a germ on a rock,
proof in our culture, right?
Yeah,
there's some things that are more mystical and perhaps more kind of not provable,
yeah,
are interesting to play with, right?
Mm-mm. Yeah, I mean, mystery systems fascinate me. You know, you have knowledge that is given from an informational package or something that a certain group know about, and then information that is withheld. And I think there's a lot of information in our time right now that, you know, the age of information, we're starting to learn a lot more, is coming out the internet. It's just like a flood of it. Trying to decipher the logic and the truth around it is the tricky part. But as you said, there is a knowing. And, you know, if you look at Alan Watts, I think, or I know is the heart, you know, the heart is... And scientists now, well, it is scientifically proven that the heart has 40,000 neurons in it. So it thinks itself. So I think there are things that definitely, whether it's in a past life or there's things you just, your intuition just knows, hang on, mate, that's not right.
So lean into that. I think we're rewarded when we do lean into that with more of it, right? It kind of recognizes what
opens up more,
it.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that it's creating a clear vessel that can receive, and there's so much out there that can disrupts that ability to receive this information. But certainly listening to it, it's the same, you know, we've spoken before about the whole situation over the last few years. Like when this whole COVID thing was announced, I just had this feeling, just like from this, it was so strong, such a strong feeling. I'm like, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
day one, I remember saying, I remember I said to my, I think I was on the phone to my dad, I was like, this is bullshit. It doesn't feel right.
Mm.
It doesn't feel, it doesn't feel that this is what it is. There's something that isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the more it went on, the more I was looking around being like, has everyone just lost the plot?
Yeah.
It just felt so, I felt so strongly. Yeah. And I was trying to disprove my own thesis. I think that's a really important thing to do, right? Anything that I believe,
100%.
I very regularly say, okay, why do I believe this? Even with the veganism thing, right? Like, I don't call myself like a strict vegan in the sense that I'm on a mission to make everyone in the world vegan. I adopt to the principles of veganism for now, and I'm not married to that belief. I'm not saying I will always be that way.
Yeah,
that is what I believe now, and I've tested and I've looked at other ways, and I've also, you know, considered a lot of counter arguments. I'm very open to the conversation. I agree with some of them. I'm like, yeah, actually that makes sense. Yeah, would I?
Yeah,
okay. But for me right now, this is how I feel.
Mm.
And I think that's really, really important. And with the COVID thing, I was like, cool, let me just look at all the data I can get, feel into like what's right, what isn't. And yeah, just the conclusion stuck.
Mm.
And I'm now seeing what's coming out now. I'm like, okay, that was the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, they can save us from a world-killing virus, but they can't sort out energy bills.
Well, it's like, how can you track whether someone's been to Tesco or not using the internet, but you can't track a paedophile?
Yeah, there's that too.
How can we have children being followed around the internet and abused online?
Mm.
And that is allowed to happen in that cam, and there's no traceability there. But you can look at whether I've left the house. Is like it's so mad to me. And you know, I'm sure it's way more nuanced than that. But equally, you know, it seems like there's an agenda, and as much as I would hope there isn't an agenda, I do believe there is an agenda.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it's one of, certainly if you look at the recurring themes over the last few years, it's one of division.
Yeah.
How do we divide people, and how do we categorize people so they feel divided? How do we pull down people's health as opposed to trying to improve their health?
Mm.
If you look at what stayed open during the lockdown versus what closed, it's very indicative of, you know, what do we need to be healthy? We need community. We need to be around other people.
Yeah.
We need regular exercise. We need nutritious food. That's a reason why all the off licenses stay open, gyms were shut. You know, it's almost
people getting fined like insane amounts for keeping their gym open.
Yeah,
it's like, you know,
I know for myself, I have to train every day
mm-hmm.
to keep my
equipment
like that.
Yeah.
I need that, and I think that's also that's challenge, right? I need to put my body in a challenging position every day.
Yeah,
to feel strong. I need to put my mind in a challenging position regularly
mm-hmm.
for it to build resilience and to build strength. And I think during that period, people went one of two ways. I know people that went out of their way to create challenge and discomfort for themselves. I know other people that just leant fully into comfort. And a lot of them that haven't been the same since. It was a real damaging time for a lot of people. Mm. You get stuck in a certain, again, we talked about forming habits and behaviours. Get stuck in certain habits and behaviours that were largely negative and find it very difficult to get back out of them.
Yeah, I mean, the longer you're in a bad habit, the longer it's going to take to get out of it. You know, sure. If you're in something for 2 years and it's alcohol, or you know, staying in watching telly for hours, you know, anything, any devil's desires, pornography, anything you want to stay in forever, it's gonna fuck you for a while.
Like, and we've all got stuff that we fall back on, right? We've all got things that we're falling back on. Mine in the past, I've abused alcohol, abused people in a sense, you know, and even work, you know, we've all got things that we've lent into for when things have been challenging. But it's, you know, it's about trying to create conditions and environment around us where we can recognize that and choose better ways, because we need something, right? We need something to help us and to guide us. But
yeah, we also need chaos sometimes as well.
I'm here for the chaos. I like chaos. I think.
Do you ever get like that though, where it's like you're on top form? And you're in a great spot, but then you just have to go back again. Mm. You have to, you know, it's like, you know, you work your way up to the good energy and then you have to go down again to build yourself up again.
Sometimes hard to sit with, right? It's like, I find when I'm very consistent with my meditation practice, I'm able to hold like the, and I feel like myself like vibrate. I can walk around and just tune into my body. I can feel myself like vibrate.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's too much. Mm. Sometimes like you say, I need to like bring it,
Yeah, it's hard to handle.
If you haven't worked, the container isn't strong enough to hold that amount of energy. So I think it's a progressive amount of work. It's like if you take the analogy of like a plug, you know, sometimes the plug's not a strong enough plug to hold the charge from
it's the wrong voltage.
It's the wrong voltage, and you know we are energy, right? So I think it's I think it's a case of building the container to such a state that it's able to handle that amount of energy.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I think that's a taking away, you know, you've been at school and business and career and everything like that. When you take that away, okay, I'm a human, I'm on a planet, and what do I need to learn before I die? without the game situation, you know, what does the body do?
We can get caught in the game, right? I think that's the whole point. Like, you know, again, if you read Alan Watts, the point is to be here is to forget that we are God.
To play his game.
to play the in the drama of life. And sometimes, you know, we need to forget in order to learn the lessons that we're here to learn. Other times it's good to recognize that it is just a game, and particularly when things are really on top or when things are really challenging. Again, it's why meditation is such a powerful practice.
Yeah.
Forget psychedelics, forget anything else. Like, you can have a consistent meditation practice. It's the best thing that you can possibly do for yourself, because it does give you a chance to step out of it. Because it can feel intense. You wake up, it's like, I've got to do this. I've got to uphold this persona of who I am.
And
I play this role and this role and this role and this role. And it's exhausting. It can be exhausting. So it's good to be able to step out of that and take a perspective that sits outside of that.
You have to let the mind rest. You know, when it's asleep, it's working. When you're asleep, it's working. So I think in the day, if you're meditating, I sleep a lot less. Now I meditate. Like, I don't sleep. I can sleep 4 to 6 hours. You know, I wake up like 6 without an alarm. So it's like, I find that you're resting your mind while you're awake. And then if you get really into the zone, you know, then you just, I've seen colors, you know, you just get completely in that zone. Have you ever done the 10-day meditation of silence?
No, Vipassana.
Yeah, that's
no,
it.
No, it does. I know people that have done it, and it does appeal to me. But I haven't done it yet. It's something that I will do, I think. I'm really, you know, I'm enjoying leaning into these different tools to see what works for me and what doesn't. And some have worked really well. Some I use regularly. Some I use sometimes. Some I've tried and I think, okay, that's not for me. I think it's about trying to use different modalities. And that's the beauty of having a global culture that we have, right? We're able to borrow and to work with different methodologies from different countries and different peoples.
Something that I'd
like to do. I can imagine this. I know a few people that have done the 5 days in darkness. that scares me. What's that
called? I haven't actually heard of that.
I so it's like 5 days in darkness in isolation, and day by day 3 or day 4 your body starts to produce its own natural DMT.
Oh my God, so you start hallucinating.
Yeah.
I know. So I saw a YouTuber that done I think it was 4 hours in a flotation tank, which was like, and he started hallucinating and everything else because, you know, that puts you out of body quicker.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, yeah, 5 days in darkness. I mean, the non-talking one I would really struggle with because I'm talking a lot. I might forget day two and be like, oh, yeah, exactly. I find it mad. What sort of meditations do you use? Do you find that help you the most?
So do you know what I'm doing at the minute? That's interesting. I've gone back to at the minute I'm doing Deepak Chopra's 21 Days of Abundance.
Okay.
It's a nice 21 day course just to get back in. And then after that, it takes about 20 minutes. And after I do 10 minutes of TM.
Okay. Transcendental meditation.
I've tried different like mantra, like I've played around with different things. I do change it regularly. I wear the mala beads most days, so 108 mantra. If I'm on the tube or whatever, rather than being on my phone, I'll tune into that instead. So I'm just playing with different things based on how I feel. At the minute, I feel the guided one, the Chopra one, it's been really good. It's nice to do some the guided part, and I do that in the mornings. Then before I go to sleep, I just do 10 minutes and just tune into my body, try not to think about too much. And typically if I've read something just before that, I would try and lean into that a little bit.
My routine's slightly similar. I mean, I do breath work in the mornings or through the day, just when I want. I mean, I spoke to a breatharian. We'll get into that in a little bit. But he said rather than do it in the sort of Wim Hof way, do it where, you know, you do it was the numbers of Nikola Tesla as well, 369. And he just breathes in and then out three times, in, then out six times, and in, then out nine times. He's like, to hold your breath for like 2 minutes. I've seen people pass out. Why not just breathe like this all the time in certain ways? So I do that through the day. Or, you know, if you're stressed at any point, just breathe in. Like, I look at anyone smoking and it's like, I need a break. I'm stressed, you know, and it's like, that's where they've got you, man. It's like, it's the easiest addiction.
Anything that you don't have control over is an addiction, right? Anything
of course
you need to do. The breath is great. I find, so if I can just take five centering breaths.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
I find with the cold therapy, doing very long inhales, long exhales. Because you want to calm the system.
Yeah, yeah.
The system.
Rather
I've
than
seen
trying.
People do it, they go before they get in. You're putting the system in a state of stress.
Yeah,
and that may work for some people. I think we're all different. Obviously, I know we're all different. But for me, what works really well is a long exhale and a long inhale.
Yeah.
To get into the cold water and have a sense of calm, and even not in the cold water, like, again, if something's a stressful situation, I'll use that long inhale, long exhales. I think it's also just it firmly brings you back to the present, right?
Yeah,
you're focusing
sure.
on the breath in, the breath out. You're not thinking about anything else. You're
yesterday or tomorrow. It's just now. Yeah, I mean, I do at night, I just have a rule. My phone's downstairs and I put on this have you heard of Robert Monroe?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the CIA tapes.
Yeah.
So it's I don't really bother with the whole 18. And to be honest, I can't really get past five. But it's to put your body asleep completely. And half an hour and then boom, I'm gone. I'm out. Cold. Like, and I find it such a good, it's white noise, you know. And then it's hemisync as well. So it's two different frequencies on each ear. But then that's the only time I would do that, really. Most of the time, if I'm meditating, it's no headphones, no nothing. Just, you know, just try and get into a meditative state. And most of the time, you can do that through breathing first, I find, and then go into it, I think.
I think it does take some time as well, right? Because your first 10 minutes, your mind's all over the place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you need, like, really a good, I think you're doing a good, you know, when I'm doing without doing the guided stuff, you know, you need a good 20 minutes just to get into that state, because the mind's
all
everywhere,
over the
everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very easy to judge yourself. And, you know, I think when people start, it's what is why a lot of people don't stick with it, or say they do it, but don't actually do it, right?
Nothing's happening.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Your mind is so busy. It's like, yeah, it does take about 20 minutes just to you to, and it's a case of, like, if you're catching it, you're winning. Right, it's recognizing. Okay, catch it, back to center. Catch it, back to center.
Yeah,
catch it, back to center.
Yeah, yeah, back to the body.
20 minutes or so. You can do it in different ways. I mean, do it like sometimes walk into the gym in the morning.
Yeah,
it's a 20-minute walk. Phone goes in the pocket, goes off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to walk, and I'm just going to focus on my breath as I walk.
Yeah, walk, yeah.
Meditation.
Yeah.
Or sports. Like I fell in love with jiu-jitsu over the last year and a half. And that is so meditative. You're fully in the body. You're grappling. You're not thinking about anything else. So I think you can even find different kind of practices you can use where you're...
Yeah, that's something I want to get into literally in Angel with my mate, jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. So you started that a year and a half ago then?
So I started playing like during lockdown.
Yeah.
Because I went back up to Norfolk and we were building a like an indoor sports center. Basically took a bought a lease on a warehouse.
Yeah, yeah.
Converted it into a football.
Yeah, I read this. It wasn't a small one, was it? 18,000 square feet.
It wasn't a small one. But we were building a gym in there during lockdown.
Okay, brilliant.
So we had someone to train.
Yeah.
The council did turn up a few times. It's like, what? I'm testing the equipment. Like,
yeah.
And we were training in there, and one of our friends was very good. He's like a purple belt or brown belt, I think he was. And he was like, look, I'll teach you. So we just started rolling with him. And then when I moved back to London, a guy who's recognized as one of the best of all time, if not the best of all time, has a gym two tube stops away from where I live. So I joined there and I've been going there for the last year and a bit. And it's been amazing.
Yeah.
Really, really one of the, my favorite sport now.
Yeah, because it's very, it's very strategic game, isn't
it's like
it?
Playing chess.
Yeah, yeah, it's like
chess with your body. And it doesn't matter how big you are. You know, it doesn't matter how big. No. It's very gentle. You know, I've been boxing for many years, and you go to a new boxing gym, and it's quite a lot of ego in boxing still, and it feels a bit more on edge. Whereas jiu-jitsu is very relaxed. It's very calm.
Yeah.
I still enjoy the boxing, but jiu-jitsu's probably taken over more.
Yeah, I think jiu-jitsu is more my thing. I tried boxing for like 3 weeks. I was like, nah.
Getting punched in the face.
I like the circuit training, but I saw that guy just got absolutely beaten the shit out of in the ring. I'm good. So obviously school wasn't like up to par. What kind of world did you fall into after school?
So interesting. I had a bit of a fairly traumatic experience straight after school in the summer. One of my friends got killed, and there was a group of us, and we got into an argument with some slightly older guys in a car, and they drove the car into us.
Fucking hell.
And it hit my friend, and sadly he passed away.
Mm.
And it was a real pivotal moment for me, because it showed me just how I got a real sense of my own mortality, right? Wow, like it could be over like that.
Yeah.
And I was already kind of allergic to the idea of sitting in an office and, you know, wasting away just to be able to go out at the weekend and get drunk.
Mm.
And at the time when I was thinking, like, okay, what do I love doing? I love football at the time. And so I started, I was kind of coaching football, got really into that. And I was just full. I went ended up being full time coaching football. Had my own little private coaching stuff going on. Was working for the local pro club, doing their like community kind of stuff. And then I was like, okay, if I could live anywhere in the world, where would I live? New York.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to New York. And I've always had this thing where like
city to city.
I've always had this thing where I was like, been very, if I get something in my head, and I visualize it, I'm going to do it. Like it's happening. And I think that was instilled for me from a young age from my grandmother in particular. It was very, very spiritual, was like bought me like the maddest books as a kid. Like and I was practicing visualization and manifesting and these kind of things as a kid.
That's brilliant.
And so I had this, I'm like, cool, I'm living in New York. And I just wrote it down and had it in my mind. And everyone was like, people are like, you're full of shit. It's not going to happen. How are you going to move to New York? You're like, you're 16, 17. Mm. And a year later, basically, I saw a job advertised for a football coach in New York. There was a club that I could play at as well. So I was still playing a bit at the time. Went to the interview, lied about my age, got the job, told them my age, still wanted me. And then I moved to New York.
Done.
Lived there for a year.
And sent all the people that said you couldn't the postcard.
I lived there for a year. It was a good experience. You know, I was going to move into a different country at 18 and having to fend for yourself was really good. Came back, was like, cool. What now?
How long did you stay there for?
About a year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I went to Mexico after that. Just under 2 years. Loved it. I'm absolutely amazing. Like wild, like pretty dangerous. But loved it. And when I was in Mexico, I was working for a guy that had set up a football academy business. And I basically was like, I can do this. So I moved back and set up a football academy.
Yeah.
And that's when it kind of kickstarted that kind of like, I was like, wow, this isn't actually that hard. And I get to work on my own terms whenever I want. I pay myself. And I think once you've
What does a football academy actually entail? Like me in the football world, I couldn't name.
I mean, it wasn't overly complex, but I mean, what we did was essentially it was a subscription business. So the players and kids age kind of 4 to 16 would pay a monthly subscription. And for that subscription, they'd get a number of training days per week over the year. Cool. Full training days, their kit, their kind of online portal login, their testing, all that stuff, packaged it up, split over the 12 monthly direct debit payments. And then we basically had this football academy up and running, and it grew to be quite successful. And at the time also like going out and getting drunk, as most 21-year-olds do. So I started running like events. So again, really simple, put my till on the front door, put my DJ on, charge 5, 8, whatever it was to get in.
Yeah.
Fill the venue, take my till money.
Yeah.
So, oh, wow, this is easy. And then I just grew that. I just started.
Was that in London or?
I was in Norwich, where I'm from, yeah.
Okay,
and I started doing it in different cities, in Cambridge and Lincoln, Brighton, et cetera. And started. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, just got the bug for creating brands and creating companies and got to learn how to do it like that.
Yeah.
And then essentially then from there kind of followed my interest to work in spaces that I was interested in or I thought would be fun, basically.
Mm-hmm. And it did what led you out of like the football and the nightlife? Nightlife, you don't drink much anymore.
Ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Ayahuasca. I had a, when I was doing the nightlife stuff, like I kind of fell out of love with the football a little bit earlier on, and I realized like I make more money doing the nightlife stuff, and I set up another, I had a recruitment company, and I was doing a few other little bits. But at that point, I got to like mid-20s, and I was doing a lot of it just for money or ego.
Yeah.
But I kind of lost a lot of my kind of, I guess, more purposeful or spiritual kind of side. And I was in the city. I was drinking a lot. You know, I was taking recreational drugs. Mm. I was partying, like empty relationships. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was all about like me. What can I get?
Concrete jungle.
Yeah. It's difficult. You know, you're in your mid-20s, and it became quite depressed. I was like, got everything I thought I wanted, designer clothes, like nice car, nice house, making money, just felt empty. Like, just felt like I felt almost like I'd bought into this dream, or this, like, you know, this way that I should be, and it left me feeling very empty. My relationships were empty. It was all about what I could get. I felt very lonely.
Mm.
And I needed a change. And I was like, I rediscovered reading again, and then ayahuasca kept coming up for me. Like, I'd be on YouTube and like a thing would pop up, and I'm like,
yeah, she's calling you, man.
Calling, yeah. Had a very interesting experience. Is actually connected to Alan Watts' book. So had this download one day, or like this intuition. It's like, go and train at this gym. And the gym was like a mile away from where I usually change.
Yeah.
And it was a gym box bank. I remember where it was. And I had my gloves and my stuff with me. So I went to gym box, started hitting the bag. This guy comes over, starts chatting to me. He's like, oh, my client hasn't turned up. He's a PT. Do you want to hit pads? Do you want to have a move around? I was like, yeah, cool. And I had my bag with me, obviously, because I didn't have a locker, because I wasn't a member. I'd just been in for a session. And there's a book poking out, and it was Alan Watts' book. He's like, I read Alan Watts. So yeah, I started chatting to him about philosophy and blah, blah, blah. And he was like, do you know what ayahuasca is? And I was like, yes. And he's like, I'm going to a retreat next week. I just thought, like, we've got spare space. Like, do you want to come?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah. And then I did my dieta for the week, was reading up on it. Obviously, I was super apprehensive because...
What's a dieta?
Dieta is like a preparatory diet and lifestyle in the week build up to ayahuasca. Yeah. So, you know, no meat, no dairy. I was already vegan at that point, so it wasn't an issue. No sex. Obviously, no drugs, no caffeine. It's basically cleansing your body.
Cleansing to be able yourself.
To be, receive the medicine, right? I went and did 3 nights, and
so you did 3 sessions.
3 sessions.
Yeah.
3 sessions. It was beautiful. It was terrifying. I was disgusted with myself. I'd like held a mirror up to myself and really saw who I really was and what I'd done, and just was disgusted.
Mm.
Just felt shameful.
Was that through it or
night
after?
One?
Night one. Okay.
Yeah. Night two.
Looked after you a little bit more.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
I didn't really purge the first night. Second night, I really purged. Mm. And it was just an overload. I just was like, it was a lot to take on board. And I think probably for a year or so afterwards, I was still kind of processing what I'd seen. It blew the doors open for me on what reality is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Until you've had, I think, one of those kind of experiences, like, mm-mm. You look at the world as very kind of a set way.
Yeah.
And then you realize that it's just a thin veil. and it took me a long while to kind of, but it, one thing was really clear for me off the back of that, and that was that I needed to do something that I was really passionate about.
Yeah.
And after that, I left everything that I was doing and really doubled down on the plant-based stuff. It was very clear that that's the path that I needed to take, and I really trusted that and listened to it. And it's worked out okay as a result. But I went back and did it again because there was some stuff that I felt that I really needed to...
Find out.
And then I went back a third time in a fairly short space of time.
Just because you liked it.
It's horrible, man. It was really hard. But I've not been back since. That was 8 years ago. About 7 or 8 years ago. And I think ayahuasca is one of those things... I hear people go in like twice a year, 3 times a year. And like, again, everyone's their own journey.
Of course.
No judgment. But for me, it's something that I might do every 10 years.
Yeah.
Or I might never do again. I feel like I may do it next year. It would have been almost 10 years because there's some stuff that I want to work through. But I don't think it's something that I would rush back to.
No, no. I mean, Terence McKenna said, you know, he was talking to someone and said, he said, what was your best trip? And the person was like, well, it was DMT. And he said, oh, so when was it? And he was like, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, because he's still processing that. And it's like, it's so much to process. I mean, if, I've seen some videos of people that have taken a hit of DMT or 5-MeO DMT, and they're just screaming.
Yeah, 5-MeO is
intense.
Yeah, I've not done 5-MeO.
No, I haven't either.
I've had some intense enough experiences on DMT to not need to do 5-MeO.
Yeah,
I also think, like, you know, there's part of me that I sit on one side and I'm like, there's a real, like, there's an intrigue to... I put my psychonaut hat on. It's like, how deep can I go? How deep does the rabbit hole go?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What can I figure out when I come back? How uncomfortable can I be in this? Mm. How lost in this can I get?
Yeah, yeah.
And there's another part of me that's like, integrate what you're learning and use it as a tool for your spiritual growth, and don't let your ego creep in. Mm-mm. Thinking you've got to do a 20 gram mushroom trip. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think there's a fine balance between the two. And I've had some challenging experiences. I've had a 10 gram mushroom trip where I've lost myself as in that experience, right? And, you know, I wouldn't recommend that anyone does that really. But
that must have been quite a long period as well. I mean, I kind of like mushrooms because it could be a 4 to 6 hour trip. And sometimes if it's 3 to 5 grams, then it's like, you know, 4 hours and then hazy afterwards. But, you know, it's acid or anything else, 11 to 12 hours, sometimes I'm just like, for fuck's sake, man.
I think of acid, you always get the thing of like, have I taken too much?
Yeah.
Yeah, so am I ever coming back?
Yeah.
Definitely had that.
Or you're just in between and you're like, oh, I haven't taken anything, I'm fine. And then all of a sudden you're like, wait, shit.
It's waves.
Yeah,
it's waves of it, right? Yeah. I think, no, to be honest, the 10 gram, I've done a few 10s, a couple of 8s. It hasn't necessarily lasted longer. It's just been more intense
in that
in
period.
The experience. But,
yeah.
But equally, I've had a 4 gram trip where it's felt like a 10.
Mm. It all depends on what ones they are as well.
Depends on the strain, depends on the, you know, what energy you're bringing to it, where you are, who you're with. There's so many kind of influences on that. And the mushroom itself, right? There's different levels of psilocybin within each.
Each one.
So
it's all a gamble.
It's all a gamble, right?
Yeah. The guy I was telling you before, Darren LeBaron, he has, I bought a jumper from him and it says, you're a mushroom having a human experience. And I fucking love that.
Mushrooms, they're just so intelligent, right? It's like, I've used it in a really practical way as well. I've like had a business problem. I've sat with the mushrooms and I've got the most incredible answer that I never would have, I don't think I would have come up with myself. It's just the intelligence. I think it's like you tune it. My theory or thesis on it is that essentially mushroom is like the internet of the planet, right?
Yeah.
And so you're
connective web
when you're pulling that, when you're pulling the mushroom out of the ground and ingesting it, you're ingesting millions of years of data from all over the planet that you're tapping into and have access to.
Yeah, the dead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's wild. But this is the thing, like, it's like even having normal conversations at this point becomes really challenging. Like, I can't sit and talk about, like, am I going to sit and talk about the football?
I think that's so right.
It's difficult to function. It's difficult to actually, you know, it's difficult to function on a surface level after that point. Like, I find it really difficult to have any kind of normal conversation.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. I mean, I haven't done ayahuasca, but I've done quite a few mushroom trips. But yeah, it does. You just leap. You leap into a different form of yourself. Like, that's what I've found. But I also microdose a fair bit, and I find that always keeps me very focused, keeps me very on what I want to do in a positive light, and following passion, I think, is key. Like, that's the once you find that passion, whatever it is, I think synchronicity just works with it. And then to use mushrooms to be like, yo, I need some answers here, I think that's what they're there for, you know. I think it's crazy with the mushroom side of the world. I saw like, not going into the trippiest world, but I saw, have you seen Paul Stamets' documentary? And it was the...
I love it, man.
It was so it, cool. It reworked out the Tokyo
subway
and made it better.
Yeah.
And it's like, yo, we should be talking to these a lot. They know what's going on.
They know what's up.
Yeah, yeah, I find it crazy. So where was, I mean, you was vegan at that point. Where was sort of your vegan moment, like your vegan aha? This is, I want to change my diet.
Like, I just had a... I guess an epiphany. I've watched a documentary. I've always been able to like change my mind on stuff, right?
Yeah.
Fairly easily. Like I hold opinions, but they're not like super strongly held. So I watched this documentary and what the guy was saying just resonated with me. It made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let me try it for a month and see how I feel.
What documentary was that?
It was just a talk on YouTube. It was
cool. Oh, right.
It was just like giving a lecture and it resonated. And it was for health reasons for the most part. So I ate a whole food plant-based diet, felt amazing. Ayahuasca came not long after.
Yeah.
And I had this real download to not eat animals.
Mm-hmm.
It was like I saw animals as people in the sense of like being cognizant, being aware. And yeah, there was a feeling that I would... Everything is energy and I'm ingesting the energy of something that didn't want to die and I'm taking on that energy. And it became quite a spiritual thing for me to not ingest animals. And that's how I felt about alcohol more recently. I felt the same about alcohol. How I originally felt about animals is how I now feel about alcohol.
Yeah.
In the same way. And it hasn't been like that since. Like I've definitely drank in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
But recently I've really made a connection and I almost like can't bring myself to drink now.
Yeah.
And I want to sometimes.
I
want
to get
sense,
to that point.
I just feel like I can't. I feel like I can't.
Bad spirits.
Listen, like I've definitely done and said stuff being drunk that I would never do myself.
Exactly.
Is that someone taking my body for a ride?
Mm,
spirit? Is it?
You're intoxicated. I mean, it's even in the word intoxicated. Like, you know, if it.
Al Ghul, like the like Arabic meaning, like it's why Muslims don't drink, right?
Yeah.
Al Ghul is like essentially you lower your vibration to the point where a lower entity can take on your body.
And
whether you believe that or not, cool. But I've definitely seen people act in a way that I know they would never act.
Yeah. I mean, it causes more bad than good in a social drinking environment. A lot can happen, you know.
And what am I trying to mask? Like what am I leaning into? I think that's also a good one for your personal growth. It's like, why am I feeling called to drink?
Mm-hmm.
Is it so I can build connections easier? Okay, so why can't I build connections when I'm not drunk?
Normally,
like, how can you lean into that and use it as a way to learn? I don't push veganism on people. I'm not going to push this on anyone either. It's like, make your own decision. What you have to do, what feels right for you. But that's where I've got to for myself. And I definitely feel a lot better. Like my training's improved. My mindset's improved. Everything's improved, actually.
Yeah.
Bank balance has improved.
Yeah. I agree with all of that, basically. Did that venture, like, was you vegan and then started into the vegan world of making these investments?
I guess between going vegan, I just saw an opportunity. I'm like, the way that we feed people is going to change over the next few years because it has to. We've got huge population growth. We've got people are growing from what they can afford to eat as well. So, populations in I guess what were historically poorer countries are now aspiring to eat Western diets, which are very animal heavy, but it's a very uneconomical way to feed large groups of people. You need animal protein. So there would have to be a shift at some point. And so from an investment perspective, it seemed like a great investment to invest in that space. It was just, there was a need. And then for myself, like it was the thing that I probably felt most passionate about in my life. And so it was cool. If I can work on this, then whether it works or it doesn't, feels good, right? Like, I feel like, you know, you can fail at something you don't like or you don't feel good about. So why not fail at something if you're going to fail that you do like and do feel good about? Because you win either way. Like, if it doesn't work, whatever you have, you quote work. I feel good doing it. And I feel like it makes a positive impact. So that's what I'm going to focus on. There wasn't really any kind of end goal. It's more just like, let me lean into this because it feels right. And I think there's a strong purpose to it. And so I played with some different things. I started with food in a restaurant perspective. Then I looked at alternative proteins. And then on the product side, I'm looking at investing, advising, consultancy as well. So I'm playing around. And it's just like, for me, like the best work you can do is, how do I leverage my skill set in a way that benefits the world, benefits myself, benefits other people, and I'm open to whatever vehicle shows up for that.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a good way to think about your work.
And like, by the sounds of it, that's kind of what, from being in the nightlife situation, you know, you had everything, but then it was kind of exterior. Now if you if you work from within and this makes me feel good, then the exterior comes anyway.
It was also like, you know, in those environments you're essentially celebrating the lowest forms of lowest what's celebrated is how you look. It's like it's ego, it's status, it's all these things which are very external, right? It's a lot of external validation as opposed to, you know, you're looking for other people to validate you rather than validating what you're doing yourself. That's one of the key differences, I think.
I find for me, like the going out scenario, like I used to go out a lot. But like now, I mean, I'll be in here a lot working away. But I find if I do go out, it's like I might stay out.
What are you looking for when you go out?
It's very tricky. I mean, a lot of the time, experience, meeting new people. And I would say I did have a problem with drink where I'd use it as a vice for confidence. So a lot of the time, if it was, if a lot of the time it would be to put myself in that environment, pre-drink or, you know, and then I started making the connections, this isn't fucking healthy. And through festivals, when I had the clothing line and everything else, it was like, I was drinking all through that period. You know, I was running a shop, like we'd done activations, we'd done loads of stuff. I had 50 staff at one point, it was nuts. But, you know, I walked to these shops through a festival so much that I actually couldn't walk at night. I got cramp and chafed. But I didn't even realize that till the end because I drank so much through the day. So I found the main thing is, through doing this and doing podcasts and everything else, it taught me I don't need any kind of vice for confidence at all. I have it within me anyway. The problem is that when you get stuck into that environment, and that's how you, and that's what everyone does in that environment, you become the person that's like, why don't you just have a drink? Just have a drink. It's like, I don't want a fucking drink.
It's the same with psychedelics. You're just unlocking the stuff that's already there, right?
Yeah,
we all have it. We have it all within us, right?
Yeah,
so it's unlocking that. I think it's interesting what you say about, you know, it's the confidence thing, but why do you need the confidence? I think there's a layer deeper than that. So why do you want the confidence? I think and it all comes back to connection and community. That's what we're craving when we put ourselves in the reason we want to go out, put ourselves in those kind of environments is because we're craving connection with each other. Again, it comes back to the God in drag thing, or, you know, us all being
one,
the universe experiencing itself.
The source.
We want to experience ourselves in relation to other people. That anything has value is that it can be shared or experienced with other people, right? It's like, what's the point in having anything if you can't share it?
Yeah.
If you watch like I Am Legend with Will Smith, imagine yourself in that position. You've got the Ferrari, you've got a massive house, but you've got nothing, you've got no one. So it doesn't add any value. So I think connection and community is such an important driver in anything that we do. And it just so happens that in our culture where we live, a lot of the opportunities for community and connection are centered around alcohol, because many people feel they need the confidence boost that comes with it in order to socialize and connect. So I think for me, it's been about seeking out experiences where I can connect with other people and feel a sense of community, but alcohol isn't at the center of that.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And what I find as well is that it actually has the opposite effect, because when you're intoxicated and you go into an environment and you feel confident because you're using that for that, that's why I think a lot of people say the wrong thing or say something else. Cause you put the blinders on. So then if you do that multiple times through your life and that's what you use, and then you suddenly don't do that, then you're unpracticed in that environment. So you don't know how to do that environment, you know what I mean? So, and I think through going through the fear, going through anything that scares you, that just allows you to then realize, okay, I'm going to be nervous, but that's just my nervous system going, yo, get ready, you know. And like, be scared, just do it, you know. It's that kind of thing I've realized now. It's like, you know, you just have to, you have to go into the situations to learn from the situations, and the outcome will be the outcome.
It's the perspective as well of like, how much does anything matter?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much does anything matter? Yeah. Like, I think
to you only.
Getting really comfortable with, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen? Can I get comfortable with that?
Yeah.
Cool. Then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I saw also that you've done public speaking. Was that something that came from the vegan world or?
Mm. Yeah, I think that I kind of, I felt like I'd unlocked something, that I knew something that was important and I wanted to share it. And I was petrified of public speaking.
Mm.
And I quite like doing stuff that I'm scared of, because I think that's where all of our growth comes from, right? So I found an opportunity. I actually got asked to do a panel, be on a panel. And when I first became vegan, I started going to some of the events, trying to connect with other people. I'd had a background with various businesses, and the people that were organizing the event had seen that I'd, at the time I was using Twitter a lot. This is like, again, 7-8 years ago. I had a lot of followers on Twitter and I was tweeting about business, et cetera. And they're like, oh, do you want to come on this panel and talk about business and from a vegan perspective? So yeah, cool. Like, I did it. It was, again, it was like quite scary, but I found that I could do it speaking to an audience. I was just talking about stuff that I cared about and that I knew about and I was experienced in. So it wasn't difficult. And then someone that was at that talk invited me to do a talk a couple of weeks later. And they ran a platform where they put on regular talks throughout London. And I did a talk there. It was 100-odd people and I was so nervous and I messed it up a lot. But it was really good. I got some good feedback after it and it felt good. And I saw that I was able to plant some seeds with people that potentially may have made a difference. And so they asked me to do another one. And that year, I think I spoke at least once a month. To around 50 to 100 people every month, all over London at these different events, mostly on the topics of like veganism, the opportunity with veganism from a business perspective.
Yeah. Were they for or against? Was it like they were
mostly against, just... mostly against, which was great because it.
So again, they just went there to troll you.
Yeah, some of them for sure.
Yeah.
But it definitely allowed me to kind of build my case for it and build my understanding, you know, especially when you're challenged like that. It's like, and I was open again, like, so, do you know what? I've not thought about that. It's a really valid point. I need to go away and have a look at that.
Yeah.
I gave the answers as best I could. But it really helped me to build that. And then, you know, I got some nice opportunities off the back of it. Someone from London School of Economics had been to a talk and invited me to go and speak there, and University College London and a few other cool places that I got to speak out as a result. It's a nice skill to have if you can cultivate it.
Yeah. And do you still get pretty nervous before you go on?
No, it doesn't bother me now.
Not at all. Not at all.
No, I've done talks in front of probably like most is probably 1,000 people. It doesn't bother me now.
See, I think I will always, I don't know, it depend on the realms of, you know, I don't really get nervous on a pod, but before a pod or anything before, or not in the way that it stops you from doing it. I think it's the problem that some people can't tell the energy, whether it's nervousness or excitement, because excitement can be so much to fucking handle sometimes as well, you know.
I think it's how attached you are to the outcome.
Yeah, true. What is the goal? What do I want?
If I'm, I try not to get super attached to any potential outcome, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and again, that comes back to having a trust in the process and a belief in that you are guided, protected, however you want to look at that. But yeah, not being attached to the outcome is very, very important in order to not feel potentially nervous. I think when you're nervous, you're anxious, it's because you've become attached to a future that may or may not happen.
Yeah.
And as a result, there's the feeling of nerves and anxiety that come up.
Mm. Is this something you've learned through meditation or through your travels to ayahuasca town?
I think a combination of all of it, right?
Yeah, because it's something...
It all kind of blends in. I think, you know, the work that you go and do on a plant medicine, you then have to integrate in your life. And the way that you integrate that is through experiencing life.
Yeah, and doing
it. Opportunities come up every day to practice different things, right? Mm-hmm. Like... And I catch myself all the time. I was on a line bike earlier. Some guy nearly knocked me off. I'm like, I'm raging. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
And I catch myself. I'm like, what am I doing? Like,
to be fair though, as soon as you pedal, They go. I think they're quite dangerous.
But I caught myself, and I'm like, I was about to jump off the bike and like, and you know, and I was getting anger. I felt myself anger come up, and I was like, catch it.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't trying to kill me. He just wasn't looking. It's a human error.
Yeah,
it is calm. Catch myself. Do you know what I mean? So that's an opportunity for me to practice. If I walk in a shop and they haven't got what I want, and I've got to walk a mile to another shop, like happened to me today. I was trying to send a letter and that came, and I'm like, cool. Wasn't supposed to be this shop. Fine. Get to the other shop. I see someone that I know. That wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for that. So it's a trust in the process of what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think the experience of life gives us the opportunity to learn lots of little lessons every day. They're there for us to learn if we can look at them from that perspective.
Yeah, and become more of, as Alan Watts would say, become the watcher.
The observer,
yeah. Because otherwise you get too involved, you know, and that's where you could be the angry person on the line bike, you know. So
it's reacting from our subconscious programming, right? It's can we be conscious of how we're reacting, and can we again observe what we're doing? It's like the Untethered Soul is a great book for that.
Yeah.
So to learn how to do that. I got a lot from that, actually. How to
Who's that by?
Can't remember. Michael Singer, maybe.
Untethered Souls.
The Untethered Soul.
Cool. We'll link it anyway.
Yeah, it's a great book. It talks about a way to kind of observe your thoughts and feelings without identifying with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah,
when something comes up, you can essentially observe it in from a third person perspective.
So attachment in a sense, rather than
yeah.
No, I think that is key. That's something I've been trying to learn. You know, not to be impulsive or reactive to a situation is key, really, because I find the scariest people are often the calm ones in a terrifying situation. You know, if you look at the mafioso gangster,
you don't have the context a lot of the time.
Yeah,
right? So you make a snap judgment or a snap reaction on something without having all of the information.
Mm.
Very often it comes back to bite you. So it's about, can I gather? Can I regulate my emotional state? Can I gather the necessary information to make an informed decision on how to act next?
Yeah, yeah.
Not allow my kind of central nervous system to respond for me in a way that isn't aligned with the outcome that I want.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose, has that helped you through business as well? Have you
definitely,
brought that
in? Yeah. Definitely.
Because there's a lot of failures with business, and I can guess, you know, it can be quite, I mean, my clothing line's, sorry, but it's gone. But it can hurt because it's like your baby, you know. So has any of yours gone south or
lots of them. And I own the mistakes.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a good, you know, I own the mistakes, and I've learned so much, like really, really, really learned a lot, and learned a lot more from the things that have gone wrong than the things that have gone right, for the most part. But yeah, certainly being able to respond with level head. And it's just experience, right? You can't, there's no shortcut for experience.
No.
You have to go through it yourself to get there. And I think that's why it's good to put yourself out there and try as many things as possible. And that's the fastest way to learn.
Mm.
But certainly, you know, there's been some big failures. There's been some big, big mess ups. I've got one ongoing at the moment, which is like, it's cost me a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Something that I signed 3 years ago that left that. If now I never would have signed, but at the time I was a different person.
It's also in between an ayahuasca trip, isn't it?
I was a different person, and I signed something that put me in a very, let's say, a disadvantageous position, and left me with a lot of risk, and that risk has come to fruition. It's put me in a financial position which I wouldn't choose to be in, but as a result. And again, I'm trying to look at it like, hey, what is this teaching me? What is this trying to show me? What positive can I draw out of this? Because I'm speaking to people, they're like, you are really calm. If that was me, I'd be this. Over that, I'm like, this has to happen. This is happening for me. I just need to figure out why it's happening. And what I've come to realize in recent weeks is I do my best work when I'm forced into a corner and I have to be really creative to come up with a solution to get out of it. And this has definitely done that. And as a result, I've come up with a couple of things. I've been able to think in a very creative way that I wouldn't have necessarily done had I been too comfortable. And so, yes, it's been a short-term financial hit, but what's come out of it in the long term is going to pay me back tenfold, I'm sure.
Hmm.
So I'm grateful that it's happened, as much as it's been
stressful.
Painful. And it's only been stressful if I've choose to feel the stress.
Hmm.
the stress is there, but I can choose to
how you interact with it, or not,
you know. And I think we can also perpetuate the feeling by building a narrative around it that we then go and share with others, right? So I'm trying to reframe the way that I talk about it, the way that I think about it, and to ensure that it doesn't become something that pulls me down. Actually, it's something that gives me an opportunity to build up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, words are spells. You've got to be careful with them. Yeah. I mean, what do you look for as through your sort of business experience now? What do you look for which is a good investment then? What kind of traits?
Yeah, so I think the team is the most important thing. The people that are running the business is the most important thing, right? Great team, poor idea, they'll pivot, they'll try something else to make it work. Great idea, poor team.
Yeah.
So a team is very important. It has to be a problem, solving a problem that I care about and that I think is an important problem to be solved. And it has to be a clearly defined product market fit that works financially and that has growth potential, e.g. the segment's growing, or there's going to be an increased need for it, or there's an ability to diversify the product or the service in a way that will later serve an emerging need. Who else is involved? If you've been able to attract some solid people, then it can speak for the founders if I don't know personally. Yeah. So there's a few things. But for me, honestly, it's been something that's happened very, like, accidentally. Like, I was approached in the early days of doing the talks by a company that needed a little bit of investment to get started, and they had a good idea, and I didn't really know what I was doing, so got involved with them, put some money in, helped them on an ongoing basis, got to learn a little bit, and just doing it again and again and again and again, and not being embarrassed to ask stupid questions to people that know more than me has really helped me to learn.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's a term sheet? What's a Series A? What's the, like, and you don't know, right? But ask and you learn and you research, and it's been something that, yeah, I think investing is I try and think long-term wherever possible. I think a lot of our suffering comes from our inability to think long-term over short-term. So investing is a good way for me to look long-term. It's like, if I put this money into this today, maybe 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, I'm putting something
as a future. You're saving in something that will have higher value. Yeah,
but I'm also energetically giving to something that I believe in and I think is important, as opposed to it being purely a financial play, which anytime I've done that, it hasn't worked.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no quick gains. Not in business as well. I think there's so much, there's so many mechanisms that need to work in order for business to work now in London and everything else. And I think it does take a lot. And I strongly agree that you need in any business is team. The idea's got to be good, the product's got to be good, but team is pure. You know, if you've got,
can execute it.
Yeah, yeah. If they can put it across, if they can sell it, then it's everything. That's
And there's so many nuances to that as well, right? It's like, are they engaged in the? Are they on board and on the same page with the vision for the company?
Mm.
Do they adhere to the values that you've set for the company, and have they been involved in the building of them?
Yeah,
you know, are they How are they motivated? Are they, you know, how they fit together? There's so many things that come into that. Business is a lot more, it's complex than a lot of people may think.
Yeah, but
equally, there's a degree of naivety that's needed in the first place to get started. Otherwise, you just wouldn't do it because it's so complex.
Mm-hmm.
It can be complex.
Yeah,
the best businesses are simple as well, right?
Well, yeah, because I think a smart mind created it.
Mm.
You know, to simplify anything is really difficult.
Mm.
That's why I think, you know, we both like Alan Watts. It's like, it's the fact that he is talking about things that are fucking crazy, but he puts it across in a way that we're all wiggly worms and it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, basically. Or you're a tube. It goes in the top and out the bottom.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. So I've got a final question, which I ask everyone on the show, and that's what reality is to you. It's a tricky one.
I think, you know, it's always interesting when people talk about this kind of, like, are we living in a virtual reality?
Mm.
Is something like, the reality is our direct experience. So I don't have a basis of comparison because I only have the direct experience that I have, and there's varying degrees of that experience. But reality is my daily waking experience in the moment that I'm in. I don't actually know if the past ever happened, right? So, is it called that last Thursdayism, where it's like the universe was created last Thursday?
Yeah.
Like, what's to say that I didn't wake up this morning
yeah.
and I was and the universe started this morning when I woke up, mm-hmm. and I was pre-programmed with the memories that I have. Everything was there, right? I just don't know. No. The only reality that we have is the present moment. It's the moment where we're sat here right now. There might not be a universe outside this shed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
The
universe is in the shed.
It's in everything. So reality is our immediate experience in the present moment. And there is nothing else outside of that.
Yeah, I love it. Well, thanks so much for your time
today.
It's been brilliant. And is there anything you want to shout out? Anything that you're doing? Anything coming up? I mean, you're doing loads. We could be here for about 10 minutes if you want to shout out.
I'm actually trying to do less.
Chill out a bit.
I'm trying to do less.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to simplicity, back to basics.
Okay. Well, brilliant. Thanks again for coming.
Thanks for having me.